In a marathon, you don't break early. You know, you try to hold on, but sometimes you have to listen to instincts and go for it. And
you went.
I went for it, and I was the 15th or so fastest guy in the race. But you know, you got to do it that day, and I was so proud to be able to pull the victory for the United States.
Today, we bring you three powerful, life-changing stories from the Boston Marathon. Each one will inspire you, and we hope teach you something about your own potential. You'll hear from Meb Keflighi, the only marathon runner in the world to win the New York City Marathon, the Boston Marathon, and to medal in the Olympics. Then you'll hear from Jeffrey Zeisel. He's a clinical social worker, and he helps people in the most difficult points in their lives. He works with first responders, military, and others who have experienced trauma. And he tells the story of his own personal experience at the 2013 Boston Marathon. And finally, you'll hear from Catherine Switzer. She's the first woman to officially register for and to run in the Boston Marathon. And she talks about the power that running can have in your life. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by the Exogen Ultrasound Bone Healing System. Exogen is a non-invasive treatment option that can help heal your broken bone. To learn more, visit exogen.com/Spartan. Meb Keflighi was not the favorite to win at Boston the year after the marathon bombing, but he believes it was the power of running for something greater than himself that catapulted him into first place. He was so proud to be an American winning the Boston Marathon that year.
But you had a frame of reference, you mentioned it earlier, where you're thinking to yourself, big deal, I've got some pain in my pelvis. I'm not living with the scorpions and the hyenas in the jungle, right? I made it out of Italy. Like, right? You've got a frame of reference where it's really not that big a deal.
You know, pain is temporary, pride is forever. And, you know, when you look back to your upbringing, Eritrea, where I was born in Eritrea, people don't have electricity, don't have lights. We get our cell phones to run out of battery, we get paranoid.
Right.
They don't have a light to live, or to read, or to study, or to do whatever that's essential that we do. We look for the closest charger, you know, around.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, and right. Frame of reference, like you call. So right. For me is, you know, when things go challenging, you know, when I'm running a marathon, I know I have a fluid station waiting for me every 5K, or which is 3 miles or 4 miles. But I know my dad didn't have that opportunity for 225 miles. He doesn't know where he's going to spend next meal or where he's going to spend the night and all that. So you have to think about this. And he did the best he could to get us out of himself to save us. And I have to do the best that I can to make sure my sponsors and people who are associated with me have success, because they count on me to be the best that I can. They sacrifice their time and energy, and I want to make sure I give them 110%.
Tell me about your brothers and sisters.
Oh, my brothers and sisters, you know, ours is really an American story, because we came here with nothing but the clothes on our back, but we had a lot of love for each other, and we came here without speaking the language. We tough situation to be in, new culture, no finance, but my parents gave us the opportunity of a lifetime. And they didn't have higher education for them, but they understand the value of higher education. And so my brother in ninth grade, he had the toughest, because they just played him in ninth grade, not knowing English, and he worked hard, and he got the most outstanding student. And my dad used to wake us up at 4:30 in the morning to try to learn English before we went to class. So Wow. There was a lot of hard work, but eventually the success is that all of them has gone to college and done something wonderful, you know, electrical engineering, law, doctor, MBA, and I'm the runner, you know.
But your dad probably didn't speak much English.
You know, my dad was a very smart man. He spoke Italian, because Eritrea was an Italian colony. Right. And he speak Amharic because of the vicinity.
Got
and
it.
He spoke Arabic, and then a little English. He went up to seventh grade. So he navigated somehow to be able to manage to get out. And he was the only one that spoke some English when we came to the United States. So he helped out the best he can.
And you guys have a 4:30. So I get my, we talked earlier, I get my kids up every morning at 5:45, and my wife says I'm crazy. So I could probably start doing 4:30.
We got another second crazy person like yourself, like my dad. But you know what? When we're crazy and do things, we are high achievers. We want to do the best that we can, and we want to sacrifice everything to be better.
To get ahead. Right? To push the limits.
Exactly.
My son, as we spoke earlier, did New York Marathon, and my other son did Boston Marathon, and both of them, they saw you out there, and they're coming for you.
You know, it's great to see that, you know, your kids do the marathon, and, you know, it's pretty special, especially Boston, and to be able to just say, you know what, the first American to win in 31 years after what happened.
We will be unified under the Boston Strong umbrella. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time since 1983, we are going to see an American man the Boston Marathon.
Ah! Unbelievable! Unbelievable! The American dream is right here.
Meb Keflezighi wins the Boston Marathon.
I mean, I took a lot of internal pressure for me to be able to say, what can I do positive to change the Boston street of the catastrophic bombing site? What can I do to impact people in a positive way? And you can think of that, you can visualize it, but on April 21st, you have to deliver, and I feel so proud to have delivered. And you know that 520 mile that I talked about in seventh grade, that just became a 430 mile, 16, and still have 10 miles to go. That's what I ran my split. But when you're doing it for a greater cause than yourself, it's huge. And I had the victims' names on my bib that I wrote the night before, and I was drawing energy from them and spirit, and the crowd was phenomenal. And you know, it just, you know, in a marathon, you don't break early. You know, you try to hold on, but sometimes you have to listen to instincts and go for it. And I went for it, and I was the 15th or so fastest guy in the race, but you know, you got to do it that day, and I was so proud to be able to pull the victory for the United States.
You're awesome. Super inspirational story.
Very kind. Thank you so much.
The rest of the world needs to listen to this and Spartan up.
Well. Thank you so much, and good luck, and have fun. I always say run to win. It's not about getting first place, but getting the best out of yourself each time and every time, and everything that you do. Go out there, be the best human being you can be.
Jeffrey Zeisel shares not only his own personal story of running in the marathon in 2013, but also some of his professional experience.
2015, Boston Marathon, bomb goes off. I'm running in with my 18-year-old son, Austin. It's his first marathon. So marathon day, I'm not running, I'm injured, but I said, I'll meet you at Heartbreak Hill, I'll run in with you. We run in, we get separated at Kenmore, he's in front of me somewhere, bomb goes off, we're right before the finish line, right before you dip on Mass Ave and make that right in Hereford and a left on Boylston, and a Boston cop says, hey, you gotta stop, a bomb went off. And I'm in shock, what, a bomb went off?
Right.
How's that possible?
Yeah.
And I hear the words, but I can't process it. So, and what's my first thought? Oh my God, my son is in front of me. Right. And then someone tells me, oh, it's really bad. People are dead. Hundreds of people are injured. There's body parts everywhere. There's legs severed. There's blood and flesh. It's really horrific. And I'm thinking, oh my God, my son is in front of me. So those are those moments in life that you never forget. And then you think, you know, how are you going to manage this? So we talked earlier, you never know how you're going to manage things until you're, you know, the shots are being fired at you. Even though you can be properly trained, you never quite know. That was my moment. So I say to myself, I'm about to lose, and I say, wait a second. The first thing I say to myself is, God wouldn't do this to me. He wouldn't kill my son and take my son away from me. At least I'm hoping. And I say to myself, and if that's not the case, I'll deal with it when I find out. But why am I going to lose my cool before I know the information?
Right.
And I also know traumatic events and terrible tragedies, 90% of the intel, 90% of the information you get will be incorrect.
Sure.
Not all of it, but 90% of traumatic events are incorrect.
First reports are always wrong.
So what do we hear about Boston? Oh, my God, the seven of the bombs and the blowing up the JFK Center.
It's always magnified.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, and then we project. So we have what's called automatic thoughts. What's an automatic thought? The boss calls you in. Hey, Colonel, I'd like to sit down and talk with you.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, what did I do wrong?
Right.
I don't think I'm getting promoted.
Right.
You know, so he's not making me a general. I'm probably getting shipped out of here. I'm going to Djibouti.
You know, that's exactly what happened, by the way.
See, these things do happen. So I tell myself, don't project. Let's manage this. And what do I know? I'm an expert in trauma. But usually I'm not the one who's dealing with the trauma.
Right,
So I tell myself, just take it one step at a time. Don't forget to breathe. You know, things will sort itself out. And then I go into action mode. What's action mode for me? There's all these other people who are really upset and hurt. Let me help them. So I start doing what we refer to as psychological first aid. Lots of people upset and crying. I go over to them. I say, are you okay? What's the matter? Well, my father's there and my sister, and they're from California and I'm not from Boston. I said, listen, I'll help you. It's going to be okay. Listen, we don't know who's hurt. And then I always say, we have to look at probabilities and possibilities. Is it possible your loved one is hurt? It is possible. Is it possible they're dead? Yes. Is it probable? Statistically, probably not. You know, we think about terrorism in the United States. Last year in the United States, And terrorism is a horrible thing, and we're trying to combat it. But last year, in the United States, 34 people died from furniture accidents. Moving a refrigerator upstairs, and they died.
Right.
More people died of furniture accidents than terrorism. It's not to minimize terrorism.
Or many other
things. And many other things, right. I mean, 35,000 people died on the roads from drunk driving.
Sure.
So, you know, we have to keep things in perspective, and we sometimes lose sight of what the real deal is. So I talked to people. I said, your loved one is probably going to be fine. Take a deep breath. This is Boston. There's great, you know, communication here. And we all managed to get through it. Fast forward, you know, I called my wife. I got through, and I said, listen, we're all here. You know, if Austin, she had said Austin had called, he was fine. And I said, you know, we really need to, like, just get the heck out of here. Because terrorists will also, it's very common in Israel, they'll plant one bomb.
Right, and it's the second one, they wait for the first responders.
Exactly.
Right.
Then they kill all the responders.
Right.
So I'm thinking in my head, hey, this could be a problem.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, when bad events happen, 80% of the people don't know what to do. 80%.
Sure.
10% of the people totally decompensate and actually require special attention. Psychiatric, someone has to hold them, they're catatonic, they're in a state of shock. Then you have the other 10%. You are one of those 10%ers. They're the sheepdogs. They're the ones, the shots are fired, everyone else runs away from this fire. Where are they going? Where are the soldiers, the military, the first responders? Where they're going toward the shots. Those are the 10%ers. And I always say, in life, I want to be a 10%er. I just want to, like, try to do the right thing and help. And we know that resiliency is also tied into those qualities. People who are helpers, who are altruistic, whether it's in the military or being a clinical social worker, you get a sense of identity and you feel good about yourself. So when you're lying on your deathbed, you say to yourself, hey, it's been a pretty good gig. I don't want to be lying in it necessarily, but you know, you can feel good about yourself. Because it's not about acquiring possessions in life that make people strong. Gee, I'm so glad I got those boots on sale. No, it's about experiences, relationships, family, you know, challenging yourself, being a warrior, getting over that last hurdle. Those qualities of resiliency will last people their entire lives. And when the body's gone, but you still have your memory, you can also, you know, relish in the fact, like, hey, I did these great things. And that allows you to have positive self-worth and self-esteem, right?
Yeah.
So, and sense of purpose is really all about that. It's like, what do we do? How do we get up in the morning? How do we go? Let's get going. You know, the people who die young during retirement, it's usually because they don't have what we refer to as active retirement. You're retired from the military, but you have active retirement.
I get very lucky meeting Joe. He makes sure I stay active.
Right, even if you don't want to be.
Yeah. I mean, we're in Boston today, but we've been all over, right? I mean, it's crazy, and you know, we just stay going, so it's great.
We'll be right back to this interview, but first, a little bit from our sponsor, Exogen. Spartans, you know a broken bone can interrupt daily activities, and even worse, keep you on the sidelines. Determining the best treatment option can be stressful. In just 20 minutes a day, Exogen helps jumpstart your natural bone healing process so you can get back to the race. Don't let a broken bone keep you on the sidelines. Talk to your doctor to see if Exogen is right for you. Exogen is indicated for the healing of non-union fractures and for accelerating the healing of certain acute fractures with no known contraindications. To learn more, visit exogen.com/Spartan. That's exogen.com/Spartan. Okay, back to the interview. Everyone has more potential than they realize. That's what Catherine Switzer says. They just need the opportunity. Here's her story.
You were the first woman to run the Boston Marathon back in the 1960s. Is that right?
No, let's get it right, Joe. I was the first woman to officially register and run the Boston Marathon. In 66, Roberta Gibbs jumped out of the bushes and ran the race. And in 67, I wanted to run, and my coach insisted that I sign up for the race. And there were no rules, by the way, about it being a men's only race. We looked at all the rules, we checked the entry form, and I registered. And that's what made such a controversy, because you know the story. The official attacked me in the race because I was a woman. So we'll tell that story.
Did you suspect when you were signing up, did you suspect there was going to be a problem? Or like, what did it feel? I can't even imagine, right? Because I run my life like I could just do anything. And so I'm listening to you thinking, you weren't allowed. How does that feel?
Well, first of all, I had always run with men because there were no women running that I knew of. And I was always welcome. And I felt this is a really amazing community. These are the original sensitive new age guys. And you have to imagine, again, that this is the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s. It's the eve of the women's liberation movement. And I always thought when I started running with these guys, they would think, you know, I'm there to be in their face. And in fact, they were just totally welcoming and very, very helpful. This is at Syracuse University, where I was a student. I ran with the men's cross country team. And that's where I met my coach, Arnie Briggs, who was an ex-marathoner, and he was a volunteer coach and he helped train me. But these guys were so welcoming that I knew when I got to Boston, I would be welcomed by the runners. And indeed I was. they were fantastic. And it wasn't until in the race that this controversy happened with the official.
And when you filled out the form, I did a little research. When you filled out the form, you didn't put your full name, so you suspected something might happen.
You know, no. It's a series of coincidences you could not possibly have repeated. I started writing journalism when I was about 13 for my high school newspaper, and the typesetter kept misspelling my name, Catherine, because my dad misspelled my name on my birth certificate. He left the E out of the Catherine in the middle. And so they kept trying to correct it. And indeed, that happened through all my report cards, all my awards, everything. So I got really tired of it, and I started signing my name K.V. Switzer. And of course, since I wanted to be a sports journalist, you know, I thought that was a cool thing to do. I was going to be like J.D. Salinger or T.S. Eliot, and I was going to sign my name K.V. Switzer. So by the time I got to university, it was K.V. Switzer, and that's how I signed the entry form. So that series of that was a coincidence that it was there. I was not trying to defraud them. On the other hand, Joe, I got to tell you, I was not going to go to Boston and say, hi, I'm here, I'm a girl, you know. I was there to run. I was an athlete. I, you know, had my head down, was concentrating on the race, wanted to run it. It's only been really in the last 50 years, 50, 60 years, that women have been allowed to emerge. The future is going to be really, really exciting. Amazing.
It is amazing to think back. My mother would run in the 70s, so you probably inspired her. She would run 10 miles a day. You probably got her going.
I probably knew her. There were so few women in the 70s who ran 10 miles a day. What was her name?
Jean DeSena. My parents got divorced. It became Jean DePalma, but she was in Queens, New York, so she wasn't in Boston.
I was living in New York. I just went to Boston.
Yeah, you went to Boston, right. But yeah, you wouldn't have known her. And she got into yoga and meditation. She went into a health food store in Queens and somehow met a yogi, and the yogi turned her on to all this crazy stuff. One of the things the yogi turned her on to, you might know this, in Queens, there's a 3,100-mile run around a one-mile loop called the Transcendence Run.
Of course, I was there. I got lifted by, you know, whatever his name was,
the yogi.
Yogi, yeah. But he's a very famous guy, and he's done wonderful things. In fact, I think Rainbow Bridge up in Niagara Falls is dedicated to him.
Wow.
Sri Chinmoy.
Yes.
Carl Lewis and I got honored by him. We came into this stadium, and he lifted us. You know, it was this real procedure. And while we were there, this event was going on, and they kept running around the same block. I've got to say, they looked quite zoned out, but it was amazing.
Amazing, right? So, yeah, so she stumbled upon all that. And then I guess through the years, it just permeated in my brain that there's something special about pushing yourself, you know, not to a point where you hurt yourself, but to a point where, you know, you go outside your comfort zone. And that's how Spartan was born. But you, for all I know, you're the reason Spartan exists.
Maybe I inspired your mom and your mom inspired you. And that's the whole purpose of what we do, really, is if we can pass on a little inspiration to other people or give them a sense of worth or that they can do much more than they ever believed. You know, that's what it's all about. I mean, even now, you know, I'm 75 and you know, the job is still enormous. We're trying to get women around the world just to take that first step, to put one foot in front of the other. And I created... from my old bib number, that the official tried to rip off of me. You see the rip there? He got that. That one is from my back. We've created a nonprofit called 261 Fearless, And that's exactly what we're doing, is we're setting up community clubs all over the world just to get women to take the first step, because they're so afraid of going outside of their comfort zone, and they're afraid of looking silly, and they're afraid of, you know, being fat, or there's something, you know. And once they take that first step, they become like your mom. They feel like they can do anything. So, and this is not unique to, it's not unique to women. It's everybody is transformed and transported by running. And that's why it is so popular. But for women, it is phenomenal because it's new. You know, we haven't had that experience. You've had it for thousands of years. We haven't had it.
I got an email today. You ready?
Yeah, sure.
This is from a woman who did a Spartan race, Candace. 6 years ago this month, I set a date on the calendar to take my own life. A few months later, I ran my first Spartan race. This month, this week, this day, I launched a business inspired by my travels to do these Spartan events. I didn't finish the business plan. I'm creating it on the go. I'm terrified, but here it goes. So it really does. It doesn't have to be a Spartan race, right? It doesn't have to be the Boston Marathon. But like you said, taking that first step, being a little fearless, right? Getting outside your car, it's really magic.
Yeah, it is magic. But almost all of us need somebody to give us the opportunity to take the first step. So you creating the events and they looking at the people and saying, hey, well, if they can do it, I can do it. Or maybe I can do that too. And for us, just taking a woman by the hand and saying, hey, come out and walk and run with me. We're going to give you a safe community, a safe space to do this in. And we followed up with also an educational program with 261 Fearless. I'd love everybody to go online and take a look at our program and join us. But it's true. You know, those women, you say, you know, most of the women in the world do not live in a fearful situation, but most of the women in the world do live in a fearful situation. And it's not just women in North Africa or Saudi who are under a burqa. It could be the woman who lives next door to you, as this woman has written to you. And just if she had a friend, and she did, fortunately, and she took that step, that's all the difference. That's absolutely amazing. And you can bet her kids aren't going to be the same.
Thanks for listening to this classic episode of the Spartan Up podcast. Remember, whatever task you're taking on, you will need resilience of mind, body, and spirit. And we're here to be your partner with reminders, techniques, and strategies 3 days a week to help you stay on track. Whatever app you listen in, click that follow button or that subscribe button to make sure you get notifications and you don't miss valuable information. See you next time. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by the Exogen Ultrasound Bone Healing System. Exogen is a non-invasive treatment option that can help heal your broken bone. To learn more, visit exogen.com/Spartan.